that sort of formally begins the retreat, taking of dependence, and it's a ceremony, but ceremonies can be used for very useful purposes, and certainly the taking of dependence on a teacher is an important ceremony, in the sense that setting that kind of intention of seeking guidance, seeking direction, wishing to receive direction and guidance. These are important inclinations of the mind and intentions that are essential to set within the mind in order to open, receptive to how this path unfolds and how it how we can grow and develop in this path. If we start off with a kind of an attitude of I know what I want, I know what I need, I have to have these conditions to make it this way and to get have it all sort of mechanically laid out exactly what one thinks one is requiring to grow in the Buddha's teachings, and one has basically painted oneself into a corner with not much opportunity for growth and development, so that the willingness to establish an openness to receiving a direction and seeking means and ways of growing and maturing in the Buddha's teachings. By setting that intention, we set out the possibility of our growth, and it's the intentions, of course, are incredibly important. That's what when the Buddha says say the nature of karma, as in the karma is volition, or karma is intention. Karma is jetana, so that by setting up a volition of seeking, of a setting aside of a sense of self, a sense of a fixed view and a fixed practice of what one needs. Then one actually has an opportunity of entering into Dhamma. Of course, what I just pointed out were the three obstacles to stream entry: Sakkaya Ditti, Vichikicca, and a Sila Bhatta Paramasa. So those are that kind of way of setting aside those things that are and actively seeking a way through those obstacles is such a important foundation to establish for oneself. So that's sense of taking dependence is a even though it's a very simple ritual, it can have very profound meaning and consequences. So that as we begin a retreat, reflect on the in different ways that we can be encouraging ourselves and using this retreat time as an opportunity for our cultivation of the path. And as I mentioned before, the was going to use the Four Foundations of Mindfulness, or Satipatthana, as a basis of certainly beginning the retreat. Use of the Four Foundations of Mindfulness, even though it's say if one looks at it narrowly, it's only one facet of the Noble Eightfold Path. You think of right mindfulness, but right mindfulness, when it's teased out, it really does open up into all the aspects of the path. All the aspects of the path are essential and necessary. And within right mindfulness, then of course, in order for it to be really effective, then it does need to encompass all the different aspects of sila, of samadhi, and of panya, which are the way of training that the Buddha gave, and I think even in, say, like think of the discourse that the Buddha gave on the Great 40, where he's talking about right concentration, but then and then developing the whole Eightfold Path, culminating in right concentration, but saying that each aspect of the path relies on right view, right effort, right mindfulness. And again, so you're seeing that each aspect of the path has this element of mindfulness in it, and learning how to reflect on the different aspects of the path from a place of the classical structure of mindfulness. Similarly, with say any aspect of sila requires this quality of mindfulness and recollected establishing of the mind. Not isolate mindfulness away from the other aspects of the path and the training, but to recognize how to integrate mindfulness in a way that allows all the different aspects of the path to be implemented and cultivated, so that the this developing of mindfulness is not say, like a mechanical focusing of the mind on one particular thing, but is a broader establishing of the this quality of awareness, alertness, clear comprehension. There's many words that help to shine a light on the more broad spectrum aspect of this development. I think also seeing the in the teachings on mindfulness, it's easy to make assumptions and not really tease out some of the underlying what comes to mind is complexity, but it's not complex. It's just maybe underlying profundity or depth that is even when we use a simple term like mindfulness that we're all familiar with. There's all sorts of layers and nuances that it's easy to overlook. One of the things that comes to mind is there's a well-known discourse of the Buddhas that is almost always cited as an example of how the Buddha taught mindfulness and the story of the acrobat and the acrobat's apprentice and how the acrobat tells his apprentice to climb up. They set up a bamboo pole and to climb up the bamboo pole, and then you'll protect and look after yourself. I'll protect and look after myself, and in that way we can make a living, do our acrobatic tricks, and then come down from the pole safely. And then the apprentice says, well, that's actually not really the way to go about it. In the sense of that, rather than you looking after me and I looking after you, that's not really the way to do it. It's that I should be looking after myself. You look after yourself, and in that way, we'll climb up the bamboo pole, do the acrobatic tricks, and we'll make a good living and be safe. And this is, the Buddha says, this is really the way to do it. In that by looking after ourselves, we actually look after and protect others. And by looking after and protecting others, we do look after ourselves. And then Buddha says, and how do we look after ourselves so that we protect others? And so, of course, it's through these four foundations of mindfulness. And that any development and cultivation of these four foundations of mindfulness that we develop by doing that, we establish a degree of clarity and understanding an inner responsibility that when we really look after ourselves, its very nature, we'll be looking after others. And I think that you know, when we really understand that any expression of greed, hatred, and delusion that we express, it harms us, so that one, of course, one doesn't want to be doing that. But then, inevitably, it has an unpleasant, unfortunate result for others, so that being able to modulate, regulate, recognize within ourselves through mindfulness what is it that can allow us to both to prevent and to relinquish those expressions of mental defilement, attachment, and things that result in suffering. And that way we can be ones who are protecting, looking after others. It's not a selfish endeavor to focus in on what is it that is a source of suffering for ourselves? What is it that we can do to protect ourselves? Because the more clearly we understand these sources and causes of suffering, then very directly we're a presence for being a support for others. And similarly, and to me, what is interesting in the sutta is when the Buddha says, and how do we protect others in a way that protects ourselves, and the Buddha then elucidates or points to the qualities that are a basis for being a protection or a base of looking after the well-being of others. And it's through patience, through harmlessness or compassion, through loving kindness and through sympathy. These qualities, when we bring them to bear in our relations with others, these are the fundamental qualities. When we engage with our fellow human beings, when we engage with structures of our duties and responsibilities within the community, when we have to, especially in this, in retreat mode, where you can really start to hone in on, what underlying quality am I bringing to this interaction? Because in retreat, our interactions are fairly prescribed and somewhat limited, and to really reflect on how can I engage in a way that really implements patience. How can I be patient? Can I have a quality that is not just reactive, but is willing to be present with the whatever's happening at that moment. To have a sense of a harmlessness and recognizing that harm arises from actions that are motivated by greed, hatred, delusion, and motivated through selfishness. And so that implementing and relying on that quality of harmlessness or compassion, avihimsa, of loving kindness, that well-wishing, to keep establishing and re-establishing feeling, intention, volitions that are based on loving kindness and in this quality of sympathy or empathy that is open to the recognition of others, sympathetic to the not just the feeling of others, but the you want to go deeper than that. You want to be sort of what is the aspiration. And of course, when you look at it in that way, certainly the aspiration of all beings is to be free from suffering, and to be able to tune into that. So that then what the Buddha says is when we protect others in this way, then we protect ourselves. And that's, of course, then you see how the Buddha's teachings are so often these setting up these feedback loops keep nourishing the practice and keep allowing the roots of a practice to be nourished and fed, nurtured by these wholesome intentions and volitions, so that mindfulness is not just some sort of cold distancing mechanical application of a somewhat alert mental quality. It really starts to encompass a range of very wholesome and bright mental qualities, so that as we develop and cultivate this quality of mindfulness, it really starts to nurture the whole path, so that as we begin our retreat, to be attentive to the ways in which we can support ourselves and support others, protect ourselves and protect others, to look after ourselves and look after others. I'll offer that for reflection this morning. Namaya Gavadagataya Sadhu Kurangadamasi.